This is Leo Baybue for KTWH. Happy New Year, everyone. I've got Michaela Rice from Gooseberry Falls State Park, the naturalist there, in the studio with me on this first week of the brand new year. Michaela, there's a blanket of white out there. How did New Year's hit the North Shore, as far as you can tell?
Oh, man, you stumped me with that question.
Well, weather-wise,
I feel like it's been pretty mild, you know? It's been in the 20s. Past week, you know, I'm just really fighting it's so white and gray up here just constantly. Like the past 10, 15, 20 days, I don't know. It's all blending together.
I guess the printers call it grayscale. It's hard to tell the difference. That's about all you have is various shades of charcoal all the way to black and then bright white and everything in between.
I almost had tears this morning. I just, like, the sun came out. I was coming to the park. I was like, oh, this is the break I'm looking for. I had been approved for some trail walking, like I had mentioned. I got to go to Teta Gooch this morning, and then the sun went away, and I was like, oh, man, you're just teasing me. Now we got another storm coming, so.
Yeah, so it might be 2-3 more days.
Yep.
There was a promise of some sun to show up last Friday, and I think it might have for an hour or two, and then poof.
Gone.
And, it's coming. I mean, some of the brightest days I know of can be in January, but it almost always means, Michaela, that it's going to be really cold.
I know. Really cold. I know. That's another thing we got to talk about. Why does Mother Nature tease us in the winter with these beautiful, clear, bright days, but then it's just so cold? But yeah, I got to pick one, right? I was sweating today. I burned a lot of calories today.
Well, and it was in the upper 20s, but what do we say in the summer? It's not the heat, it's the humidity. You were creating your own humidity, too.
Yep. So anyway, yeah, I'm still kind of learning.
It's the layers thing, too, though. If you can take a layer off and still be protected.
It's just, you got to do the humidity, wind factor. It wasn't really windy today, so I wasn't getting that heat blown off of me. So
right.
I think I overshot it, but didn't want to be super cold out by myself in the middle of nowhere either. So
yeah, when you're trying to be self-sufficient, Michaela, it's pretty tricky because what do you do? Carry all the clothes that you just stripped off?
I also did.
Yeah, which is means your hands are full and you can't get any work done.
Yep, and then if you step off the snowpack.
Oh, boy.
I found that out the hard way. I literally sunk up into my hip, and I was like, okay, do not do that. You will just get stuck.
Yeah, you want to talk about working up a sweat, trying to get yourself unstuck. And then if you put a snowshoe under a hidden log underneath your body, you're trapped. You might be waiting the spring to have help arrive.
I was thinking about that today, all the snow rescues that could be happening just by my careless mistake of looking too far over. Ooh, look at those little paw prints, and then boosh, there I go.
Yeah, you need to have one of those buttons that people ski in when they're in avalanche country so you can alert someone that I'm stuck.
Yeah, the beacon.
Well, it's a blanket of white, and even right down to the shoreline, there's good snowpack now? Because I don't live on the shore
crusty.
Zone.
No, it's really not even just comparison like to Gooseberry to, you know, up into Finland and stuff. It's crazy how much more snow
they
got.
It's very different.
But we still have enough snowpack for skiing and stuff. Sure. It's just not the depth that they get there.
Right.
So, yeah, it's just kind of cool to see the variation and stuff. When I was driving up to the shore last Thursday, you know, the snow has been pretty constant now that we've had this pack. I found a very fresh bobcat roadkill.
Oh,
and
my.
So I'm always on the lookout. You know, this goes back to my wildlife background, always looking for critters to look at, even if they are deceased, or opportunities to just see animals up close or to take specimens legally that could be used for interpretation or for teaching, you know, all that stuff. So I'm always on the lookout for that.
Of course, it is with the wildcats. It's pretty challenging to get a really great observational perch on them going about their business because they're pretty reclusive, it seems.
Everything I hear or read, it's, you know, very elusive. I've only seen bobcats down in Texas. So I guess this find was pretty amazing. And she was very freshly hit as well. So everything was in perfect condition. She literally looked like she could have woken up on me because it was a head hit. So her body.
She was a full grown adult.
Oh, yes. She, yep. I don't know how old she is. I don't know how to age cats, but we looked in her teeth, and she had a lot of fat on her, and she was definitely a full grown, I mean, at least, I guess, 25, 28 pounds by just holding her up. I get really good because I volunteer with dogs and at the pound and stuff. So
You've got calibrated biceps.
Yes, absolutely. I was like, ooh, this is 25, 28 pounds. So yeah, she was a big cat. I probably overestimated a little bit, but oh, just the most beautiful thing. Yeah, we saved her hide, and we have salvage permits, and I got the CO to come, and I tagged it and learned about which animals are protected for bears, which the bobcats are one of those protected by the CITES organizations. Yeah, I talked to the conservation officer, and he said, unfortunately, bobcats during this time have a harder time catching food, so they come out to the roadway because of that snowpack. They're looking for an easier meal, maybe, or scavenging. And so I presume that's what happened to her. It was just after her morning kind of fog. She was probably on the side of the road, and I just happened to drive by right after she had an unfortunate
event.
So
the irony there is this cat may have needed to look for some other deceased animal that was done in by being along the roadway.
Yeah, it's kind of are they looking for food, or do they come out to the road because it's easier walking and they might also find some prey along the road?
Suggesting they don't just come out to the road at one point, but then they might walk along the road to see what
absolutely.
They can find. And that increases their risk greatly the more time they spend out along the road.
Yep. Carnivores in particular, if you're ever looking for cat tracks or scat from felids or canids, so wolves or coyotes, go to a trail. That's where we collect. Biologists will go run road samples to look for these types of things. So it's a behavior that they do. So it's, I guess, expected. But the fact that she was just perfect condition, a raven hadn't gotten to her yet or anything. So put her in. I've had a few injured animals or deceased animals in my car at this point. So I had all the materials to pack her up and bring her up to the park. And I got to take a look at her. And then upon further inspection, I got to look at all of her tendons and her arms. Oh, my gosh. You could tell they have all the mechanisms for just batting, pawing, climbing, pouncing. It was really cool to see her mechanics up close, especially her.
Now the folks at home couldn't see your gestures.
I keep moving all my hands and stuff.
Your paws and your arms swinging and batting. Yeah. Yes, they're a very efficient predator. But what kind of size range of prey would these modest-sized cats like lynx or bobcat usually be working?
Yeah, so they eat anything from a small metal vole, you know, can fit in the palm of your hand.
Yeah.
And they do predate white-tailed deer. I think adults are very rare, but they do have the ability to take one down, especially if they come from a tree and jump on top of them. Otherwise, a coyote, I guess they could take down, or a fawn. But that's about the upper, essentially their body size or bigger they can take down.
Or bigger if they catch them unprepared, like landing on from above is a tough one. Get the jugular?
Yep, come right for the neck. So
okay.
That's how they take down those bigger animals.
These are the laws of nature, folks, that, you know, it may not seem very pleasant, but you have to eat.
Have to eat. And that's how they make their living. So the lynx does things very similar. They're a little bit more specialized on the snowshoe hare, which is the main track that I've been seeing, and my jaw drops at the size of some of these lagomorph paws is what I, you know, they're rabbit paws.
Oh, thank you. Help me.
Lagomorphs is the group of rabbits are in. But yeah, their paws, their back feet of these snowshoe hares are just ginormous. I call them monster bunnies. I couldn't even figure out what critter this was because they were so large.
Kangaroos in training.
So
wrong continent.
I could see a lynx having a very good meal getting one of these.
Are you seeing in the territory that you get to cover, you're seeing evidence of lynx tracks or anything?
I was
excited.
That
if
would
you
be
had
really
been.
Cool. And I don't think I've successfully found a bobcat print yet.
Okay.
Lots of medium-sized round-ish paw prints that I saw today at Teddy Gooch, but I don't think any of them really screamed bobcat to me yet, but definitely no lynx.
What should we know about the amount of territory it takes to support one of these wildcats, do you think?
Of course, I do not know that.
I know. Future homework. We'll come back to that.
I will tell you, though, that bobcats are doing remarkably well in Minnesota, so that's great. Harvest is up, which also shows that just bobcat populations are also up, but they've been tracking them in Minnesota since the early 1990s.
Okay.
And yeah, we're seeing a lot more bobcats up here. So they estimate about 2,000 bobcats in the north, northern part of Minnesota. So that's great news. Lynx, very rare. I did not look at population estimates for Minnesota for lynx, but...
Oh, you didn't look it up, but as far as we know, they're still in this challenge status. It's not officially threatened, but is it, or is it? I don't know my P's and Q's on the status of the lynx, but...
I don't either.
People at home, we can look such things up on that interweb thing very easily, but I know for the longest time we've been talking about we're seeing maybe a few more than we had over a period of 20 years, but it's certainly the population... Could use some bolstering.
And we don't really know if their southern range is changing, which is where we are. And so that's kind of this issue is like, going this local extinct or local threatened kind of issue I had mentioned the other week that locally, yes, we might be seeing less of them, but that's just because their range is being pushed north by climate change.
I was going to ask if climate change is the number one actor there, because we have had years where we've had substantial snow. I don't know what the signature characteristic of the habitat needs to be for lynx to succeed. Do you?
I think it's snow depth.
Snow depth. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
Well, so we might have to get into the interior where the snow depth is more consistent. It sounds like along our lakeshore,
we get a lot of variability.
There is a lot of years low snow, and not the easiest maybe for those of us that live by this beautiful body of water, the Great Lake Superior, to see a lynx. But I'll be anxious to know if you see any big cat prints.
Oh, you'll hear about it if I see one. Okay. Absolutely. You'll hear about it.
And that's good because radio is best for hearing by. Mm-hmm. And I've got Michaela Rice, Gooseberry Falls State Park naturalist, with me today. First of the new year, nature wandering. We still don't have a title for this darn thing, Michaela. What are we going to do?
I don't know. New Year's resolution, I guess, should have been to come up with a name.
Well, frankly, you and I just looked at, you know, what is it going to take to see some sunlight on the landscape? I think it's going to take a nice cold snap mid-month. They tell me it might not come for a little bit, at least the rest of this week, even though we may have some snow activity. It doesn't look like we're going to have that Arctic air blast yet. It can't be far off. And what do people need to keep in mind about how our native creatures are going to fare during the coldest time of the year, which is seemingly ahead of us in the next 30 days? We look at a landscape and we hardly see anything except the birds at the feeder, and we wonder, how are the critters making it?
They're all under the snow.
Some of the four-footed mammals that weigh over 20 pounds, they're not all under the snow, are they?
They're just coming out at different times of the day or something.
Right.
I don't know. I'm not seeing them either.
You're not?
No. I just see the footprints of a few. I don't even know when the dang bunnies come out. For all the snowshoe hare prints I've seen, I think they must be doing incredibly well this year. I know they kind of have the boom bust. Maybe I need to figure out where on their cycle they are, but they are just all over the forest floor.
Because you're seeing the prints they leave behind. You're just not seeing them in person.
Not a single rabbit. Nope.
Wow.
Nope.
Are they that wily, or are you just timing?
I think timing, probably camouflage. I think they, you know, can still go underground, under things.
Sure.
They must just be, really smart.
And aren't they going to seek, when they're not actively on the run, aren't they going to want some protection
around
them?
I mean, they're so vigilant. Rabbits are so vigilant. So if they don't want to be seen, they're not going to be seen unless, I don't know, how do you see snowshoe hares, people? Tell me how. I can't put food out, but.
What kind of hair chow can you carry in your, kibbles that you could carry in your pocket and try to get them to come to you?
There's
not going to happen.
Treats, but no, I can't do that as a naturalist.
Oh, that's right.
We don't feed wild animals,
Leo. Right. So what is your relationship with people who are avowed feeders of birds and deer? And
birds are kind of a category on their own, maybe.
Okay.
We should talk about this for a whole section. And
maybe we should reserve some time.
Because
some of us who are avid bird feeders have found ourselves over time, well, of course we're feeding red squirrels. That's just a given. But what about those deer coming to our feeders? Is that really a great idea? I don't know. There's pros and cons, I'm sure.
Yep. We'll talk about it. I'll put it on our list.
Okay. Our to-do list for 2023.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we don't have too many observations to talk about, except we do have this wonderful event coming up in February. I leave it to you to just remind us on February 18th at Gooseberry Falls State Park. You're going to have a big to-do. What is it?
Yeah, so we'll have some trails lighted with luminaries of some different shapes and sizes. And it's just a time to come enjoy being outside. Not a lot of people come outside in the winter at night. And it's kind of a time to just celebrate that community-wise, celebrating anything in particular other than just being outside. And so, yeah, come. It's just kind of an experience to walk around at night with all the beautiful candles. And then we'll have a campfire at one location. I'll probably be down there handing out marshmallows and chatting with folks. And then you can also come to the visitor center as well, and we'll have some refreshments.
So there isn't any there. Program specifically
nope.
of sorts?
No, nope, okay. Other than to just enjoy the park in it, all its beauty.
It's a wonderful social atmosphere to be out with other Northlanders, people who enjoy being outside in the mm-hmm. cold in the evening with light twinkling around you.
Yeah, it's peaceful. It's heartwarming. It's charming. I went to my first little candlelight event in Duluth, you know, for the winter solstice.
Yes.
And it was beautiful. It just feels nice to be out there. So,
yeah, the chance to do this with others of like mind, you really got to plan for it and make it happen, because so many people are becoming couch potatoes, I'm
mm-hmm.
afraid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid that the cabin fever is going to start building if we don't watch it. So I guess the idea is, just like those kids from North Shore Community say, be observant. We also have to be active.
Yes. Yep. Get out.
Plan
stretch your
for
legs.
It.
Just, yeah, I just like, I make up my mind, I'm going outside. Just put the clothes on, get out there, and then you don't even notice when you're out there and dressed for it.
And as you pointed out, you're just as likely, unless it's during one of those Arctic blasts, you're just as likely to be so well prepared that you're warmer than you expected
mm-hmm.
to be, and you're going to sweat.
Yep, yep. So it's not as bad as, you know, you talk yourself up being outside. So anyway, come meet me. Come enjoy the park. Love to have you.
Fantastic. Well, Michaela, Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, you as well.
And all the staff up at our North Shore State Parks that are doing a great job. And we will see you in a couple of weeks. And it sounds like we got some things on our list. I got to see this moose paw that you're talking about.
Yes, I have a bio artifact for you to blow your mind at how, what's the word? You're talking about losing words. How buoyant
yes.
these paws are. They're essentially like a horse hoof, but in ungulate form, which I will talk about as well. Yeah.
I'd love to have a photo of that to put on our
sure.
website, just to put, and maybe to provide some perspective, put a common object and this moose hoof next to it and be stunned by just how much flotation this, what does a moose go sometimes, 1,000 pounds for a bull?
Oh, yeah. I'll get the upper weight.
Okay.
We do the antler with antlers and then
yeah.
without antlers, because that's a lot of mass as well.
It
so
good. Oh, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. I wonder how much an antler rack could weigh.
There, yeah. I'm thinking like width. This hypothetical moose couldn't even come in the studio. It wouldn't even fit through the door. It wouldn't even, they're so big. So yes, I'll have some props or something.
I have to say the concept of a moose being in this studio with us is freaking me out, but it would be very special. Thanks, Michaela. We'll see you again in a couple of weeks, I sure hope. And in the meantime, watch it out there in the trails. Don't overheat.
Yes, don't slip either. So
okay,
see you
don't
soon.
Get stuck.
Bye.
Bye now. As Michaela Rice, naturalist from Gooseberry Falls State Park, this is Leo for KTWH.